BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Five Lives Rugby Union Daily.
Another day, another daily, and another rivalry for us to discuss. Now, on Monday, we had Gregor Townsend talking about the Calcutta Cup. You might remember a few weeks ago, we had Sam Warburton on England versus Wales. So do go and check those out if you haven't already on BBC Sounds. But today, it's going to be all about Ireland versus Wales. I'm delighted to say that joining me here, I'm Sarah Orchard, by the way, in the red corner, we have former Wales international two-time Grand Slam winner Tom Shankly. Franklin, how are you?
Yeah, good, thank you. All fine.
And in the green corner, delighted to say we have former Ireland international Shane Horgan. How are you?
Very good. I'm not sure if I'm happy with the way you were setting this up, Sarah. You know, this is more confrontational than we like. We're putting this behind us.
Well, this is what this whole pod is going to be about. When it comes to Ireland, Wales and rivalry, you guys have lived the start of what this rivalry might be. Tom, is this a thing in Wales?
I think it is now. I don't think it used to be a rivalry. There was a long period where I don't remember Wales beating Ireland. But then all of a sudden when Wales became more competitive, I think maybe when it became regional rugby in 2003 and there was more derbies between Ireland and Wales, I think it has become one of the biggest rivalries we've got now. Because both teams have had good success over the last 20 years, I think it's become one of the biggest matches. It used just to be England, honestly. England was the biggest rivalry. But now, I think if you look at the past results, Ireland is up there as well, without the hatred.
And we're going to build on that with you, Shane. And no doubt that the name Warren Gatland is going to come into this conversation repetitively throughout. Of course, his first international appointment as a coach was with Ireland back in 1998. I only realised the other day he was 34 years old. He was so young.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Bonkers, isn't it? It's insane. I think about that now and go, what was going on? It was quite remarkable. But, you know, Ireland, and I'm looking back at the results, and if you look at from 2000 on, Ireland, you know, won five games on the trot. And then Wales won in 2005, but won a Grand Slam and a championship immediately, something that Ireland hadn't done. And then Ireland won the next two games, and Wales come in 2008, win another Grand Slam immediately and a championship. And Ireland were looking around going, hang on, we've been winning all these games. We haven't won a championship yet. We have a few triple crowns to show for ourselves. And here had this Welsh team that, you know, we're consistently beating is really beating us when it counts. And they're bringing home the super prize. So I think that is, you know, one of the big elements that started this off. I think probably an element of jealousy from Ireland, to be honest with you. And then there's definitely the Gatty and Eddie thing, you know. So Gatty was not happy with the way he left Ireland. And, you know, I think I read there he'd won, I think, you know, maybe 8 of the 10 games before he got sacked for Ireland. So it wasn't a disaster. Eddie was his assistant coach. He always felt that Eddie knifed him in the back, and he said that before. And to some degree, that may be the case. I don't know. But and then there was, you know, then there was that massive rivalry that became in between those two. And yeah, I don't think ever forgave Ireland for letting him go. And in fairness, he probably should be, because he did so well after that. We set him on his way.
Well, exactly. And I have to say, there might be some younger listeners listening to this and thinking, Eddie, we're not talking about Eddie Jones. We're talking about Eddie O'Sullivan here. This is
Showing
a different era. Well, don't worry. We're all in the same bracket in that. But just to flip that back, you mentioned about 2005. So this is where we turn back to you, Shanks, and we go, OK, this is actually Mike Ruddock taking on Eddie O'Sullivan. And it all comes down to the final day. It's in Cardiff. You've got that 13 shirt on. And Wales don't just win. You win it convincingly. It's a first Grand Slam since 78, which, you know, the Welsh public have been starved of. It's a first Triple Crown since 88. And it's actually a first win over Ireland since 2000. I mean, there was a huge amount of history and sort of pride all wrapped up in that one moment.
Yeah, it was. Because I remember playing Ireland in 2003, where we lost by a point. I'm sure we'll get to that game soon. And this is also where the big rivalry comes from, because of the close games and the manner in which both teams won. I remember the biggest thing we had to do that day, and I know you weren't playing, Shane, but we had an injury on the wing, and I said to Mike Ruddock, look, why just play on the wing? And he said, no, you know, your combination with Gavin's going well in the centre. We want to keep him in the centre. We'll play Mark Taylor on the wing. And Mark Taylor hadn't been involved in any of the games prior. But Reece Williams was out. Hal Luscombe was out. So he was the only person really that could fill that role that had been in the squad. So the biggest thing we had to do was try and hide the fact that Mark Taylor was playing on the wing. So we had to send Reece Williams out to warm up. And he had pulled his calf and he was hobbling along. And then just as we ran out then, we tried to surprise Ireland to say, you know, Mark Taylor, who's a centre, never played on the wing before, is on the wing. Because if they'd known earlier, you know, there might be a chance that they could target someone like that who's inexperienced. And he had probably the best game I've ever seen him play.
And the other thing that you mentioned there, and this is why I think the rivalry sort of developed probably post-Gatland as well, is because Mike Ruddock was, like, right, Mike was my first ever coach in my professional coach in Leinster. And Mike was absolutely adored in Leinster. You know, he's, you know, still to this day, and his two sons I've played for. And of course, you know, Reece being a complete sort of talisman for Leinster over the last 15 years. So, you know, for the pain of losing, you know, sort of you know, losing against Wales in 2005, it was definitely tinged with, you know, a joy for Mike as well. And I remember texting him after a match, you know, a nicer guy you couldn't meet, you know. So it was, you know, I think it was post that kind of there, it felt a little bit more Aggie, because, you know, for all the reasons we mentioned, there was definitely an element of Irish players looking at this Welsh team who were able to turn it on and turn a, you know, a good season into a Grand Slam season, which was something that Ireland hadn't been able to do at that point.
So there's a couple of things here that I really want to drill into with you guys. The first one is about you saying it's a bit aggy. Now, there's quite a famous comment of Johnny Sexton. It's only a few years old, where he talks about pre-2009. He did say that the games between Ireland and Wales, they were a bit nasty. That was his word. But he said everyone went on the 2009 Lions tour and everyone went, actually, we're all right, actually. We actually quite like each other. So what was that period before 2009? Was it nasty compared to any other Six Nations game you played in? And what was the difference?
Did you think it was, Shanks? I have to say I didn't. When we went on the 2005 Lions, and listen, there's a lot talked about the 2005 Lions in terms of it was a, you know, a very unsuccessful tour for lots of reasons. But, you know, there was a very big cohort of Irish and Welsh lads on that tour who, you know, I think got on exceptionally well together. So, you know, I don't think there was a personal animosity between the players. And maybe there was, Shanks. You were played a little bit later than me. I don't know if that developed post 2009, because I don't remember it being there, other than, you know, that kind of sort of tinged with jealousy for your success.
I think it only really came in once Warren Gatland became in charge of Wales, because it was a bit more personal for him because of where he coached previously and the way he left Ireland. You know, it's clear to see that he wasn't happy with how proceedings went. And he tried to maybe transform that onto the player or transfer onto the players a little bit, but there was nothing really pre that. I mean, there was a couple of fights during games. I remember Paul O'Connell and Rob Sadoli having a good crack at it during the 2005 game, the Six Nations game. But prior to that, nothing, because neither team had great success really prior to it. So it wasn't like, you know, it was England, and England won the World Cup in 2003, and they were the team that were flying high. I think Ireland and Wales were probably around the same level.
But did you think, Shanks, post, say, 2008, you'd then won two Grand Slams in what was that, you know, 4 years or whatever it was, and Ireland, in effect, hadn't won anything? Do you know, they just hadn't delivered on a lot of second places. You know, I was involved in a lot of them. You know, a lot of triple crowns, but actually not the championship or the Grand Slam that maybe that sort of era deserved. And maybe this was, you know, our own reflection on ourselves to think. Did you kind of think, well, these guys are pretenders? They're great in, you know, Europe and the clubs, and you know, they're great up to a level, but actually, what do they have to show for this level of performance that they're meant to have? Meanwhile, we've got, you know, Grand Slam medals dripping off us all over the place.
Probably not really, mate, because the team was littered with stars still. Your Irish team, you know, it was a team that had full of superstars, but for whatever reason, it just wouldn't click, would it? You look back at the teams from that you had from, say, 2003 for 10 years. It was loads of big name players in there. Yourself, you had Das, you had O'Driscoll, Paul O'Connell, There was loads and loads. So we never really looked at you like that. I think we were at the stage with Wales where we were just happy to take any wins. You know, anything that came our way, we would take. And I think from 2005 onwards, we had probably a lot more self-belief than we'd had previously. And self-belief, confidence plays a massive part in Six Nations tournaments.
I always thought that from Wales as well. It was when you guys played for Wales, there you just seemed like different animals, you know? And I think there, you know, and correct me if I'm wrong here, and I may be, you know, I may well be wrong, but it did feel that, you know, the focus was so much on Wales above and beyond sort of, you know, regions, that I remember watching, you won't thank me for saying this, I remember watching Sam Warburton one time come over for Cardiff and playing against Leinster, and he was like anonymous on the field, like absolutely anonymous. It was you don't have to say how good Sam Warburton was, how good he was for Wales and how good he was for the Lions, just like one of the generational players, you know, and in the folklore of Wales and Lions and Six Nations forever. But it did feel as if everything else was kind of a warm-up for you guys for the Six Nations, and then you would turn it on with a kind of a level of intensity and passion and commitment that actually wasn't necessarily there in the regions or for any other time during the year.
Yeah, you're probably right, because we didn't have too much success in whatever the league was, whether it was the Magnus League, the Rabobank, it's been called many things, hasn't it? Guinness Pro 12. Sometimes it was like an escape for us to leave our club that wasn't doing particularly well, sort of mid-table, and go to Wales where you had a new environment, you had a group of players that were confident, that played together, and we went through, and you get cycles, don't you? So you get cycles of players, and we knew we were at the start of a cycle of a new crop of players coming in. And a lot of older and more experienced players had left, and we knew we'd have this same group for a while. So it was often, you get into camp and it was just a different mindset completely. Away from the club that hadn't been doing too well, in an environment where you could win, and it was a winning environment.
And just on that, something that does again seem to be a bit of a theme that you guys are touching on here is about this, it's almost a domestic rivalry. I know we're talking about there's a sea between you, but with the league that you play in, obviously, we know the Wales players, they always step up when they play internationally. But is there a jealousy of that Irish pathway, Shanks, about how they've used all of the private schools and they have this conveyor belt currently of players that are just seem to be churned out permanently, whilst in Wales right now, that there are real concerns about where any internationals are going to be coming from very soon?
There is now, definitely, 100%, because I look at the Irish League, I cover the URC every weekend and you watch the teams, and there's just no way really that Welsh teams can compete week in, week out. You know, they do get the odd wins now and again, but you look at Leinster, Munster, you know, they're quality outfits. And it's only, I'd say, over the last 10 years, because I think when, back when we played, Shane, it was still quite competitive. There wasn't this massive gap of Ireland and Wales, you know, in terms of club rugby, but there is now. And I look at, you know, the players coming through the Irish system, and I am jealous. You can only look at that and think, yeah, you wish you had that amount of quality players coming through in different positions.
It's interesting, Tom, and it's, you know, not just the school system. The schools are very, very strong. You know, I didn't come from a schools background myself, so I came back from the youth, so this is a dual system that creates players. But you're right, the majority of players do come from that. But the position of rugby in Ireland has changed enormously, say, you know, to coincide with my career, like, you know, from maybe, you know, 1990, 2000 on for Ireland. You know, Ireland rugby was a sort of a minority sport in Ireland, listen, and to some degree still is, but I suppose the exposure it gets on TV and in print and media is really disproportionate to the kind of, you know, the level of sport it is now. So there's, you know, Gaelic football and hurling are, you know, still by a long way the sort of primary sports. Football or soccer is next, and then you've got rugby coming in. So, but, you know, the exposure it gets has been enormous. So the desire of people and sort of young guys to want to play rugby for Ireland is extraordinary. And what you're doing, you're getting them into a system whereby they're being identified very early, and their commitment level is borderline ridiculous. I don't know if I would have been a rugby player or could have been a professional rugby player under these circumstances. I think I probably matured a little bit later in terms of actually sort of, you know, my willingness to commit fully to rugby. You know, it's, and listen, maybe because the structures weren't there, you know, you never had to make those decisions. But, you know, we're talking, you know, weights programs from sort of early teens, identified in different development systems from, again, early teams, you know, earmarked all along the way, you know, very, very highly skilled, highly educated in the game of rugby, and with a seamless, enormous appetite to do all those things. So Ireland, and in particular, you have to say Leinster, yeah, just because the nature, the size of the province and the school system there, is churning out, you know, a number of really, really, really excellent players every single year, which is difficult for you sort of, you know, I'm sure for Wales or many other nations to keep up with.
Well, just a reminder to anyone listening to this, the reason we're drilling so deep down into this is we will have full commentary, of course, of Ireland against Wales this weekend, coming to you live from Dublin. It's a 2:15 kickoff. You can follow us, of course, on Five Sports Extra and here on BBC Sounds as well. But I just wanted to pick up on a few matches that you guys were involved in as we sort of build towards this rivalry. And I feel that we're going to lead this whole podcast through to what is going to happen this weekend and that sort of Gatland-Farrell showdown. But if I take you both back to 2008, because this is a match that you have both played in, and for people that don't know this one, it's at Croke Park as well, which obviously adds to the emotion here. But this is another day that is a Welsh day. This is another Grand Slam. It's round four, so it's not the final game, but still it's an absolutely enormous occasion. But you feel that that was the moment that Wales got that Grand Slam. Shanks, how do you remember it?
Yeah, I remember it really well. I remember the amazing stadium that is Croke Park, because we hadn't seen anything like it before. Lansdowne Road was obviously being redeveloped. And I remember the bus in, and we're just going through a housing estate. And you sort of look around thinking, where on earth are we going? And then this massive stadium appears, and it's beautiful. It's all symmetrical. You walk out there, there's huge numbers there. And Shane, I think a turning point could have been if you had scored that try, Shane, that...
I remember it. I was going to, you bring it up. I'm actually losing my marbles here. So you go on, you talk about it, and then I'll hand over to me.
Because you were so close. You were so close.
The try I scored, you mean?
Yeah. But, I mean, you didn't score that try, and Shane Williams scored a world-class try that was basically the difference. It was so close all the way through that game. And, you know, I remember that try. I remember Adam Jones had beaded hair, which was the strangest thing we'd ever seen, ever. And it was one of those games that you couldn't do it now, because we lasted for about 2 minutes picking and going, you know, towards the end of the game. You couldn't do that now, because you just get penalised for sealing the ball off. We just kept going and going, and another super close game, but it was a lucky one.
I remember that so well, because the... You know, we were coming off the back of the World Cup and had a disastrous World Cup, and we're at sixes and sevens. You know, we really were. It's funny, you know, and it's not dissimilar. I know France won their last game, but I got the sort of same sense of this French team that they're, you know, they hadn't looked onto the next page of what they were meant to do after the World Cup, because that was the climax. That's what it felt like for us in 2007. So 2008 wasn't a good tournament. Actually, it wasn't a good tournament. Ultimately, it cost Eddie O'Sullivan his job. But that day... I think I was injured, Shanks, and I came on maybe a half time or around then. I think that's my memory of it. But yeah, that was, I got a ball and I cut in, and I thought, oh, for all the world, I had scored. And it was Mike Phillips, who was like extraordinarily strong, just got me. And I thought I put it down. I thought I'd grazed the whitewash, but I probably hadn't, in fairness. But yeah, I just thought at that moment, oh, is that the difference? And I don't know if you'll remember this. The other abiding memory I have is we were pressurising you down. It was in your own 22. And the sun, I think, was shining as well. Or that's the memory I have for a sustained period. And I thought, we're coming. And then there was either a ball dropped or, you know, a ball was knocked out. And Stephen Jones picked it up and drilled it down the field. And as he ran down on the chase, he was hoopering, I think, and hollering. I think you were one of them as well. Arms up, screaming, running down the field. And you thought, oh, this mightn't be our day now.
Because do you remember Martin Williams got yellow carded for tripping someone up as well?
That wouldn't have gone down well in 2008.
No, it wasn't. And Warren Gatland was huge on discipline. But it sort of, it ended up maybe saving a try as well. He got yellow carded. But yeah, my memory of that game was just Shane just doing something incredibly special. He ended up going round. I can't remember who it was. It might have been Andrew Trimble, maybe. And then just dotted the ball in the corner.
But you're saying also, you just, oh, Shanks, those players that you just listed off there. Oh, my God. Like, you know, talking, you know, I mentioned Stephen Jones and Mike Phillips and then Martin Edwards and Shane Williams and yourself. What a team. Do you know what I mean? That's a Grand Slam worthy team, if ever there was. So these are like all time greats of Welsh rugby. So, you know, it's really nice to think about that. And, you know, really good guys as well as our, like, you know, Martin Williams, such a great guy and so tough, you know. And again, another guy who was on the 2005 Lions that was just, you know, a really, really good guy. But, you know, it's nice to sort of reflect, even though that wasn't a particularly good, you know, sort of memory, good, nice to reflect that you were sort of sharing the pitch with these guys. And, yeah. Like, I don't feel as bad about losing now.
And just to say, Shane, the final score was Ireland 12, Wales 16. You did actually start that match. I hate to break it to you.
Did I? Yes, sorry. You did. That's not good, is it? That's not good.
And the Shane Williams handoff was to Andrew Trimble. So
phew, wasn't
there
me,
you
at least.
Go. Wasn't right, you. Okay, you're absolutely good. Fine. Right then. From that, we moved to 2009 because the rest was history in 08 where Wales go on and then they beat France back at home. But 2009 is finally where we get to a big Irish moment. You know, your first Grand Slam since 1948. Shanks, this again, we're down to the last day now of the championship. Mm. The reason I'm looking more at you now, Shanks, than I am at Shane, because you do have a little bit more therapy around the 2009 Six Nations required than perhaps Shanks does, even though Ireland won it, because you weren't involved in that big last moment at all, were you?
No, I wasn't. I played for Ireland for the previous 9 years, and I got dropped that year. I'd been ill before Christmas, and in fairness, I can't complain too much. Tommy Bowe came in, and he was absolutely exceptional from that point on for the rest of his career. So, yeah, I can't give out too much about it. But I'll tell you what it was like, there's these sort of sliding doors moments, you know, I think for teams. And Ireland had been in a couple of sort of Grand Slam deciders or championship deciders, and we'd never come out the other side of it. And you just sometimes, the longer those things go on, and I'm kind of thinking about, you know, Scotland now in a kind of different way, where you think you've got a group of players who could do something or should do something, and you only get so many chances, and then all of a sudden your opportunity could be gone for another decade. But actually, if you do take the chance, then it sort of instills a different type of confidence and growth in the game, and that did it. And, you know, I actually thought that Irish team was maybe, you know, not insignificantly better than the Welsh team maybe going into that game, but you could see the level of performance from Wales went up massively, and actually the level of nerves that were attached to everything that Ireland did went up massively. And, you know, I'm not, you know, we were very, very lucky to win that game in the end, and could have lost it.
The biggest thing I think is that we could have won the championship as well, results dependent. So it wasn't as if it was just Ireland's to win. It was a big game as well, because Gallant had this theory that he wanted to play with Jamie Roberts and Gavin Henson, and he tried it before, I think, against Italy, and it didn't work out. So I came on and ended up scoring a try, which certainly helped my my selection for the following week, which was this game.
Yeah.
And I ended up starting with Gavin Henson in the centre, and it was big for me, because obviously Jamie was the new star on the show, and he was on the bench. And Lee Byrne was at 15, but then Lee Byrne got an injury early doors, which meant Gavin Henson then had to go to 15, which meant then I had to play with Jamie Roberts in the centre at 12. And I remember this game really well, probably more than any others, probably because it was one of my worst, because I was all over the shop defensively. And I remember we had a massive plan of trying to target Ronan O'Gara, as every team
that
would.
That went really, you know, well.
I mean, to the point where, you know, you're running against defences in training and someone's got a bib on, you know, and you call him O'Gara, you're trying to attack wherever he is in the defensive line. But every team tries that. It is often difficult to do because he's either well protected or the ball is slowed down from the set piece or it's not delivered cleanly. But I remember Gordon Darcy just stepping inside me on a phase play and went through. I remember then I got caught up thinking Jamie Roberts, O'Driscoll had done Jamie Roberts on the outside, so I end up stepping in, and then he puts I think Jordan Murphy through. So defensively, I was all over the shop that day, and I remember it really well because I was thinking, right, that's the end of my Lions selection, 2009. It wasn't, because there's a few injuries and I got selected, but it was that bad. But also, again, it was like a bit of a blueprint of what 2003 was, because it was drop kick. Rog ended up nailing the big one. But we did have a chance right at the end. And Stephen Jones, you know, he's got that distance in him. It was just in front of the halfway line, and maybe he miskicked it.
If we can just give the timings, Wales were leading on 76 minutes. You were 15-14 up with a minute to go. And it's the most easy, I say, as a non-international player, but straightforward textbook work, particularly by the Irish forwards, to give O'Gara this beautiful position to drop a goal. And he does it so well under incredible pressure by the rushing Welsh pack. But as you say, there is a moment where Stephen Jones can maybe nick it back, but doesn't quite do it. Shane, where did you watch, and what was the reaction back in Ireland?
It was relief more than anything in Ireland, because the whole country was watching it. That was for certain. And I watched it at home with some friends. And I have to sort of admit, I thought that the opportunity was gone. It did look like that twice, actually, because, you know, just before, as you said, just like a minute before the end of the game, you know, Wales had gone ahead, and. Ireland were looking shaky and nervy, but they probably delivered their best sequence of the game. And listen, that drop goal said a lot about Ronan O'Gara as well. And if you kind of know Ronan, you know, I always say, if I had anyone to, you know, kick a goal or indeed drop a goal for my life, I'd pick Ronan O'Gara, because whatever, he had sort of unshakable resolve and confidence, and he would never have doubted, or it seemed as if he would never have doubted himself. And it did feel that was his moment, and he wanted the ball, you know. And we've seen different occasions, whether it be in international or club rugby, where, you know, that starts to pan out and your 10 goes missing a little bit, or, you know, he wants to get right up to the, you know, the goal line almost before he, so he gives a little chip over. You know, that's not, you have to take the opportunity when it's there, and he did, and that's why he'll always be remembered for Ireland. But yeah, heart went in the mouth a couple of moments later, where the penalty was given away. Like, Stephen Jones was totally capable of that, and another guy who you would bet your bottom dollar on to sort of kick those types of goals and never shank responsibility. So yeah, it just sort of glided off his boot, and it never really looked as if it was going over. So yeah, and cue massive celebrations all over Ireland.
I never feel that bad about it either, because although it wasn't, you want to win that game. You know, we had won it in 2005 when we'd beaten Ireland, and it's sort of, as much as you're disappointed, it, you thought, right, if you're going to lose to someone and they're going to win a Grand Slam, then you'd be happy with Ireland, because they had gone through a lot of turmoil.
Oh, isn't that nice?
It's very nice. It's very nice. Yeah. Very nice.
Would you ever say that about Wales?
Would I like them to win a Grand Slam? They have so many of them.
Well, if you can't win it yourself.
Fair enough.
I still, you know, I grew up in a house where we watched rugby. We had, and like, I think really everyone had this video, 101 best tries or whatever, greatest tries. And it was almost entirely from the, you know, late 60s right through the 70s. And so I was, I would say, more au fait with all those legends of Welsh rugby than I even was with Irish rugby, because we didn't have anything like the success Wales had. So you had all these like amazing players, like, you know, sadly, you know, JPR died recently, JPR, JJ Williams. My dad would be telling me about Barry John and the type of player he was. So, you know, there was an amazing and a massive affection for Welsh rugby, because they were playing the rugby, you know, that everybody wanted to see. And, you know, they're a small Celtic nation like ourselves. And, you know, as long as we can, as often as we can keep the big boys up out, I think we're doing each other a favour.
And something about this era is when we move away from 2009, I mean, 08 as well, but we're in this very intense period where the Six Nations is really dominated quite significantly by both Wales and Ireland, which is where you feel that this continues this theme, because we go to 2012, it's another Welsh slam, it's another win in Dublin, which must really irritate the Irish fans. A last minute penalty from Lee Half penalty. Lee Halfpenny,
that's a good slip, though, because that's a really good slip. That's what he should be.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll claim Lee half penalty. There we go. And then that Wales win at 23-21. 2013, another Wales Six Nations title and the only defeat came against Ireland on the opening day, this time back in Cardiff. I mean, you can see where I'm going here. The sort of Dublin Cardiff factor. How do you both feel about travelling in the opposite direction? How significant is it?
It's a lot harder playing away games, obviously, because you're in different surroundings. I think you always associate it with positive memories from places. So if you're going to a place that you've never won before, you're asking yourself a few questions. Is it going to be this year? Or is it going to be the same as previous years? So I think with Wales, they don't have any fear of going to Ireland anymore. And same with Ireland coming to Cardiff, because they can use that positive reinforcement they've had before, knowing that they can do it and they have won at these places.
I have to say, I always found it extraordinarily difficult going and playing in the Principality, the Millennium, whatever iteration of the stadium it was at that point. But I felt the atmosphere in there was, I kind of like no other atmosphere in the Six Nations. I found it very difficult to get my breath there. I felt I was always tired. I always felt that the noise was it was extremely noisy. The air was quite heavy, especially when the stadium was closed. But even when it was open, just the way the stands and encroach on the pitch. It wasn't one of those stages where I was inspired to play. It was more intimidating, and I felt it was taking a bit out of me.
And Shanks, before we move on, just on that, what kind of stick did you get, whether it was Croke Park, Lansdowne Road? I mean, you always keep your beanie hat on when you're with me at the Aviva Stadium these days. What's it like?
So I'd have to sign autographs, isn't it? Photos, just go undercover. I don't know, Lansdowne Road was a surprise. And I know it was quite open, but you're there, the elements. It's not often you go to a proper big stadium now where you're open to the elements, because they're either covered or there might be a little bit of a swirling wind. But I remember Lansdowne Road was just, the wind coming from left to right when you come out that tunnel was just incredible. People spoke about it, and until they actually go there and realise how bad it is, you're thinking, you know, this is international rugby, it's professional rugby, you know, there shouldn't be a 30-mile-an-hour wind going from left to right. You know, it should be neutral conditions. But, I mean, no, that was a brilliant stadium. You talk about old school, and, you know, people are creatures of habit, aren't they? They grew up in rugby stadiums or rugby clubs, and that felt like a big rugby club, and it had that air about it. Croke Park, I think the stadium was just too nice. It's too big, it's too nice. It's not that intimidating when you go
just
there.
Just weren't used to it being
no,
nice.
No, it's just, it's lovely. It is lovely. It's like, it's a lovely building. It all looks nice, but nothing too bad.
It's a lot nicer for a Welshman than an Englishman.
Well, we're going to pick apart everything that is Warren Gatland and Andy Farrell, but all of that on the other side of this.
Exciting times, Ellis.
Oh, is it? Why?
Well, our brand new podcast is here. Two releases a week, and we get to leave behind the shackles of live radio and draconian vaping laws of Broadcasting House. Ellis, we are the pioneers of digital Britain, grasping the opportunity to redefine the audio landscape through powerful, impactful, dynamic conversation. You and I will inspire the next generation of free thinkers. What are your aims and aspirations for this new dawn?
I'll try to arrive on time and not eat mangone.
You know what? I'll take that.
The Ellis James and John Robbins podcast. Out on Tuesdays and Fridays.
Listen on BBC Sounds.
Right then, so we're building up to everything that's going to happen this weekend between Ireland and Wales in Dublin. Full commentary, of course, on Five Sports Extra, 2:15 start. Straight after that, the Calcutta Cup match between Scotland and England. That one kicks off at 4:45. But the reason we're focusing on this Ireland-Wales rivalry in particular is Warren Gatland hangs over this. And Andy Farrell does come into this story at some point in the last 10 years. And if it's all right, Shane and Shanks, I'm just going to lay out the sort of the Warren Gatland playbook when it comes to, shall we say, this rivalry and how influential he is in it. So obviously we all know he was the Ireland coach 98-01. It doesn't necessarily end well. He's eventually made the Wales coach, and a lot happens when he's made Wales coach, and also when he gets the Lions gigs as well. A lot was made of the fact that he dropped O'Driscoll for the final test in the Lions in 2013. There's actually quite a big quote in his autobiography about it that I'll read you now. He said, "There was an extraordinary level of hostility way beyond anything I'd ever encountered. It was wild and vicious. There was no escaping the anger, the insults, the torrents of accusations about being anti-Irish. I couldn't believe what I was reading and hearing." You add to that, of course, when he doesn't take with him Sexton to the Lions in 21. You can sort of see where this is coming from. I mean, Shane, as an Irishman, how do you feel about all of that?
Well, there was a couple of sacred cows there that, for Ireland, that you don't touch, and Brian O'Driscoll was certainly one of them. And then I suppose, you know, Sexton became one as well. But it was a brave call by Gatland, and you know, and it was a call that, you know, worked out for him. You know, would it have worked out as, you know, if Brian had played? You know, we'll never know. But you know, I remember I had retired at the time, and I did an interview with Brian after that tour for Sky, and I asked him, did he resent Gatland, and you know, as a result of that, and he thought for a while, and he said, well, I kind of did, you know. So it was a very unusual, I think, situation for Brian. I don't think at that point he'd ever been dropped, you know, by any, you know, any team ever, you know. So and I suppose Brian had been, you know, so instrumental in everything Ireland had achieved, both sort of building in those sort of slightly fallow years, but ultimately to the success that was achieved later on and continued, you know, from here on in. So there was a lot of reverence and love for Brian, you know. So so that was always going to be an issue. But I think if it had been that alone, I don't think it would have been as big a deal, you know. But I think it was built on the back of, you know, everybody knowing, and Warren making it, you know, clear that he wasn't happy with the way, you know, that he'd been treated by Ireland, and there was definite, I think, a resentment from him for the way he'd been treated, and he did use that in, you know, one way or the other to sort of, you know, stoke up emotion in the Welsh camp. And I don't know if it worked. I don't know if it's something you've infiltrated to you guys, Tom, but it certainly did up the sort of intensity and emotion level pre-games.
And if I can just jump in there to say, Shanks, everything that Shane has just said, what was your experience of being around Warren Gatland when he took on Wales? Because we heard Sam Warburton talk in a few pods back, when you go back to the England-Wales rivalry, he said, look, England-Wales was the big one for the players. But when it came to the management, it was always actually more about Ireland.
Yeah, we were aware of the disappointment of him being released from Ireland and being sacked. But he didn't really mention it. Until it might have been 2009 or 2010, when he essentially says that we all hate the Irish. Not in those words, but we'll dislike them, maybe.
Yeah.
And I remember speaking to Martin Williams, and I'm saying, we look at the headlines in the paper the next day, and we just can't believe it. And we're all sort of saying, no, we don't. We don't. But yeah, I think he wanted to create headlines, and he wanted to create a rivalry. Part of that is probably from his own hurt, but it didn't really transform onto us. There was that competitiveness, because Ireland and Wales were both top teams going head to head, and you always want to get one over on the opposition, but there wasn't that hatred in there.
Okay, so I've actually got that quote as well. It was in 2009, Warren Gatland came out and said, "Recent Welsh experiences against Ireland at international and provincial level have not always been the greatest. Of all the teams in the Six Nations, the Welsh players dislike the Irish the most, and they are all very motivated to be playing on Saturday." And I think that was the game where we said Ireland won a Grand Slam. So we yeah. are covering
but there we
all
are,
the
but
ground.
He's not afraid to create headlines.
Yeah.
Gats,
but I remember he different, like he got up. Yeah, we got on Irish goats as well, you know. So yes, in that match, it may not have worked, but I think, you know, on other occasions, you know, maybe it did. And
he says what he thinks.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
You know, he's not just, it's not just straight answers. You know, you'll get a bit of emotion in there, and sometimes it slips out, other times it doesn't. And you know, he has dropped a few grenades before. It's not just Ireland.
But, Shanks, I remember the match we lost in Croke Park. You might remember we went back to the hotel. Was the Shelburne. Do you remember?
Yeah.
Do you remember the Shelburne? Really nice hotel. And we have the function there. And I remember how happy Gatland was and how smug he was. It was unbelievable. So I do think he took a disproportionate pleasure in, you know, in beating in Ireland. And you know what? fair enough. Do you know what I mean? If you're sometimes you feel hurt and you feel, you know, it's like, you know, if you're rejected by your, you know, by your girlfriend, you know what I mean? You want to
no,
get
can't
one
relate,
over.
Mate. Can't yeah. relate. Can't relate. I remember that hotel because I was obviously against Brian O'Driscoll on the day and I'd smashed him in a tackle, absolutely hammered him. And he went back like 20 yards. And I remember I said on the floor to him, do you want to swap shirts after the game? I might not have smashed him in the tackle, but we were both on the floor. And he said, yeah, fine. We carry on the game. But he went off probably about 5 minutes before the end of the game. And he was obviously injured. I didn't want to bother him after the game. So I just left him to it. And we went to the Shelburne.
Shelburne, yeah, Shelburne.
Yeah, so we went to the Shelburne Hotel. And Paul O'Connell came up to me with a carrier bag and it had Brian's shirt in it. And he said, Brian said he was going to swap shirts with you. He wanted you to have it. And I thought, well, that's very kind of him. And I also thought, well, does he not want mine?
Probably. Are you all right, Shanks?
Probably not. Brad. Probably not. But the best thing about that was often post-match dinners, you get to sit with players. And I remember it was sort of half Welsh, half Irish, because often if you're given the choice, you're just sitting in a group of your own mates. But we were all sat around the table and it was a great night because we'd won. We were drinking. I put the carrier bag under the table and totally forgot about it. I woke up the next morning.
No.
I woke up the next morning and I panicked. I really panicked. And I was thinking, oh, no, someone's going to be walking around with his shirt on because they're embroidered. So, you know, it says your name. It says your cap number. It says who you're playing against. And I had to speak to Alan Phillips, our team manager, and we're ringing around. And eventually someone at the hotel had found it. And just before I got to the airport, the hotel couriered it to the airport and gave it to me. And
that's
I was just
amazing.
Yeah, and then I sold it on eBay a week later.
So. Absolutely brilliant. So this is all Warren Gatland, of course. The name that we have to mention now is Andy Farrell, who, of course, you know, has risen up the coaching ranks. And, you know, he's been on a couple of Lions tours with Warren Gatland. He's now been named as the next Lions coach. We are always led to believe that they have a very positive relationship between the two of them. We haven't seen too many fun and games. Farrell's not really one to partake in them. But where do you think the rivalry is between the two of them? Do you think it's there or is there too much respect?
Well, I think all coaches have a sort of rivalries and egos. I would say with Andy Farrell, he's probably the sort of straightest batter of a coach in terms of his interactions with the media. That Ireland have had in a very, very long time. You know, he does not give you much, you know, and he rarely goes into either overpraising or sort of denigrating opposition players or coaches. And he's very focused, I think, on Irish game plan. And it's funny, that kind of straight bat or kind of, you know, sort of little bit of a sort of mundane type of personality is, I'm led to believe, the exact opposite of what he is, you know, in camp, because, you know, he's a hugely charismatic guy in camp and they admire him, you know, they really look up to him. And that's quite that's a difficult thing to almost universally apply to all players. It's difficult to instill that, but really important. And the other thing that I think he's done is he's made really smart and sort of brave calls in the type of coaches that he's brought in to support him. He brought in Paul O'Connell, which made a difference. He shaked up his backroom staff a little bit and he's continued to add to it and refresh it. And that has been, you know, very, very encouraging for Ireland. Mm-hmm. It's worked well. They seem to have a system that everybody is very comfortable with. And as Shanks said, you know, when they do lose players, that it doesn't crumble because of the loss of a player or two. That actually the system that he's and the environment that he's created allows players to to flourish and the team to benefit. And he does remind me in some ways of Gatland, in that, you know, from the outside in, that Gatland has been able to create an environment where, you know, players maximise their ability. And that was maybe an issue for Ireland under Joe Schmidt, where players were a little bit impinged almost and we didn't see the best of them. You know, Andy Farrell has turned that around, and that's seemingly, from what I can see looking into the Welsh camps under Gatland, he's managed to get them to, you know, be 6 foot tall and, well, maybe 8 foot tall, because they're all well over 6 foot.
And Shanks, if we feed off that ahead of this weekend, you know, nobody wants to play Ireland right now. Wales come into this off the back of two losses, incredibly frustrating losses as well. They've been tight games. I mean, is just this the worst place that Wales could be going this weekend?
Yay, brilliant. It is a bit like that, you know. It's Ireland at the moment are just, you know, they could have won the World Cup. They beat South Africa. You know, it was unfortunate they got New Zealand in a quarter final, you know, because they could have easily, they played good enough rugby to go through and win the World Cup, and they have done for the last few years. And nothing's changed since then. That French victory was huge. And part of me wishes Willemse didn't get red carded, because I think Ireland still would have done it without that red card, because they still looked like they were putting them under pressure. But, I mean, Andy Farrell's very, very good. He would have learned loads from Warren Gatland on the Lions tour. I think he's 100% the right choice, because we want to see the Lions play like Ireland. We want to see that all-court game. You know, we don't want to see pragmatic rugby. We want to see a team go out and actually look at defences and work out how to break them down, rather than just trying to do it physically. You know, do it with your brain as well, which is where Ireland are streets ahead, I think, at the moment. So it is worrying with the Welsh team going over there. I've said this, Welsh rugby at the moment is in a bit of a hole with everything going on. We've pressed the reset button. Budgets are really low. We're going to lose more players next year because they were dual contracted and they were contracted. And as soon as these contracts run out, they're not going to be able to afford to keep these players. We are where we are. What I want to see is improvement. We saw it against England. You know, the second half against Scotland was good. We saw, again, improvement against England. Regardless of the result, I want to see a Welsh team go out there and try and put a bit of pressure on Ireland. Not just be pragmatic, not just kick the ball in the air to chase, but actually go out and try and play a little bit wider, because we're not a physical team anymore. We've got to play to our strengths. So that's all I want to see. We're not good enough at the moment to, I think, beat Ireland in Ireland, but we can go out there, we can put pressure on them, and who knows what might happen.
And to both of you then, as we come to Saturday, how big is this rivalry now between Ireland and Wales? Or are we talking about rivalries in a very different way right now because of the Irish dominance?
We're talking about two different levels, I think. You're talking about a team in the URC, the top teams, and the gulf between the Irish teams and the Welsh teams is huge. Even though the Ospreys beat Ulster, it doesn't happen too often. And Ulster are going through a bit of a transition, I think, at the moment. But I think there is a huge difference in the consistency of that Irish team to the Welsh team. And it is a little bit worrying for me.
And back to the sort of point we made at the start, these rivalries are based upon the competitiveness of the fixture, isn't it?
Yeah.
And, you know, as Tom points out there, Wales are at a different part of their cycle. And it doesn't mean that they can't beat Ireland, but I think it makes it much more difficult for them to beat it. And in fairness, Ireland should beat Wales, because they are, you know, right at the top of their game at the moment. And anything other than a win at home against a Welsh team in rebuild mode would be a bit of disaster for Ireland.
Right then, both of you. That's teed it all up very nicely. I won't do predictions just on this occasion, but I will say, Shanks, you're going to be in Dublin, but you're going to be leading the pub crawl, is that right?
Something like that, yeah. A corporate pub crawl, can we call it that? Yeah, I've got a hospitality company, so I'm bringing some customers out to enjoy the Irish life, which is great.
Drop me a text, Shanks.
You won't come out. You'll talk.
On that, I'll say goodbye to you both. Enjoy the weekend.
Thanks, Emil.
Thank you.
And just a reminder that, of course, Ireland against Wales is our 2:15 kickoff and 5 Sports Extra on Saturday, followed by Scotland, England, 4:45. That one, of course, will also be on 5 Live. Then on Sunday, it's France against Italy. It's a 3 o'clock start on Sports Extra also. Everything is on BBC Sounds. And just a reminder that tomorrow, you can, of course, hear everything from the team news. That's going to be myself and Ugo. And if you've missed anything this week, don't forget we had the incredible interview with Gregor Townsend talking about his memories of the Calcutta Cup match. That was on Monday. The Nation's Pod, of course, was on Tuesday. And yesterday we were in the England camp, so you can absolutely fill your boots. Right then, that's it from us. Speak soon. Bye.
The drama.
They're having to be separated. They've both been shown the red card.
The entertainment.
And it's
the superstars.
Foden!
Oh, yes!
What a goal.
Welcome to the Planet Premier League podcast. I'm Mark Chapman, and every week, Cesc Fabregas, Nader Manua and myself talk all things Premier League.
They have this dynamism and this quality that they can play anywhere. They need to prove themselves in scoring more and more and more goals.
I think if they don't win the title this year, the season is a failure in the league.
Planet Premier League. Listen on BBC Sounds.